manager of the economics, Economics 4010 here at Utah State University, and today we'll be talking about Chapter 5, where we will be discussing such topics as elasticity and going from individual to market demand. And as usual, we will be using a few of the figures from the overhead transparency file, so get those ready and we'll make use of those as we go along. If you will refer to Figure 6, you will see that we have a market demand function that consists of the horizontal sum of a foreign demand and a domestic demand curve. So we're adding together two demand curves here, but it's sort of interesting that each of those already reflects the horizontal summation of all the individuals in the foreign country and all of the individuals in the domestic country. Now, as shown on pages 130 and 131 of the text, to do this algebraically, both the demand functions, the domestic and the foreign demand function, are initially written with P on the left-hand side. And the textbook seems to have a bit of a hang-up about insisting that the functions be written this way. It really makes no difference. But in order to add them together, the first step is to solve each of the two functions for Q, because we're going to add across the quantity axis, not across the price axis. So step one, solve each equation for Q. Then add the two equations together, simplify the results on the right-hand side, and you will get the market demand function. Q is equal to 120,000 minus 1250p. Now, the book seems to think it's important to go back now and solve that equation for P, and so you may want to do that, and you'll get 96 minus 0.008q. And that's an important concept, and you'll need to be doing that periodically throughout the course. The next topic is has to do with the sensitivity of the quantity demanded to changes in one variable on the right-hand side of the equation. Now recall, the demand function has a variety of variables on the right-hand side. As we saw in the last chapter, it obviously will have the price of the good, but it will also have population, income, advertising, some of these other variables. And so when we talk about sensitivity, we're talking about how sensitive the quantity demanded is to changes in the price, or in population, or in income, or in advertising. But of course, we will focus on one of those variables changing, with the others being held constant. And the first examples have to do with advertising. That is, how do changes in advertising expenditures affect the quantity demanded? Now, there are two concepts here that are important. One is, if we are measuring this elasticity over a discrete part of the demand function, over an arc, so to speak, of that demand function, we will be computing an average elasticity over that arc. And we're going to call that the arc elasticity of demand. Conversely, we can measure the elasticity at a point on the demand curve, and that is called the point elasticity. The equation for the point elasticity, which is shown as equation 5.4 on page 135 of the text, is simply the first derivative of quantity with respect to advertising. And technically that's a partial derivative, and hence the text uses those partial derivative signs. But if you just think in terms of taking the derivative of quantity with respect to advertising, holding all the variables constant, you'll do just fine. And then that derivative is multiplied by the ratio of A over Q. All right. In contrast, the arc elasticity formula, which is shown on page 138, equation 5.7, here we're looking at the part of the demand function between two points, and we call that elasticity the arc elasticity, and we have a computational formula for that, and again that's shown on page 136, and then also on page 138, equation 5. And the equation is not difficult, but it's a little cumbersome to discuss verbally, and so I'm going to just let you go through that on your own. Now, from the standpoint of running a business, we need to be very interested in how the quantity demanded of our product responds to changes in advertising or income or whatever these other variables are, because our profits will depend on it. And what we'll see later is that there'll be, for example, an optimal level of advertising. That optimal level is the amount of advertising that will maximize profits. So we need to get to have these elasticity concepts down pretty well and to be able to talk about them intelligently. Now, go to figure 9. This shows several important principles. Number one, the elasticity generally will be different at every point along the demand curve. In fact, if the demand curve is linear, that is, if it is a straight line, then unequivocally the elasticity will be different at every point. And also, the elasticity, as we computed, is a negative number, and it's negative because an important part of the formula is the slope of the demand curve, and we know the slope of the demand curve is negative. Hence, the elasticity is negative. So you'll notice in figure 9 that they have used the absolute value of the elasticity so that you can get away from having to be talking in terms of negative values. And what's important here is the absolute size of the elasticity. That is, whether it's if it's big, the absolute value is greater than 1, but technically the value itself is less than minus 1, and that becomes a little cumbersome. So we'll talk about the absolute values here. Well, you'll notice that from a quantity of 0, the elasticity, if you start at that point up at the top of the curve, the elasticity is greater than 1 down to a point about midway through the function, and then the absolute value actually becomes negative. The absolute value is less than 1 and approaches 0 as the demand curve approaches the x-axis. Now, shift to figure 11. And you can relate now the elasticity to the total revenue curve. And again, this is important from the standpoint of running our business. We want to make sure we price our product appropriately and that we're operating in the right part of the demand curve. So if you move along the demand curve starting at the vertical axis, obviously if you don't sell anything, your total revenue will be zero. And then as you reduce the price, total revenue begins to increase, and that's shown over in the right-hand part of that diagram. And as long as the absolute value of the elasticity is greater than 1, as you lower price and increase the quantity sold, your total revenue will increase until you reach the point where the absolute value of the elasticity equals 1. And that occurs at a quantity of 1/2 QX. Beyond that point, to the right of that point, the elasticity is less than 1. It may be like minus 0.8 or minus 0.6. If you continue to increase the price in that range, total revenue will decline and will ultimately reach zero at the level of QX, where of course you're charging zero for your output, which is nonsensical, but if you don't charge anything for output, of course you'll have zero total revenue. And so these relationships are fairly important. Now, a bit of advice for you students: don't memorize this. Think it through. And use the elasticity formulas to think it through. And if you go through it a couple times, then you'll understand this and you'll be able to reproduce it and you'll have it back in your mind, but you won't have to. You'll understand it and you'll have it. If you memorize it, you may be able to reproduce it, but you won't really understand it. So that's a fairly important issue. Now, the last topic that we'll discuss here is the concept of a cross-price elasticity. Now, that's simply yet another type of elasticity. Given a demand function, whatever variables on the right-hand side there will be an elasticity for them. Well, one of the variables that will be important in many demand functions is the price of other goods. For example, if we're selling a soft drink and we're competing with Coca-Cola, the quantity we sell of our drink will depend on the price that's being charged for Coca-Cola. And hence we want to be aware of how sensitive our quantity sold is to a change in the price of Coca-Cola. And here we use what we call the cross-price elasticity. That is a price elasticity that crosses two products. Go to PowerPoint figure 13, where this is discussed. Now, if, and think about two products like Coca-Cola. Let's assume we're selling Pepsi-Cola and our competitor's Coca-Cola. If Coca-Cola raises its price, and Coke on this figure would be X, good X. So if the price of X changes, it's going to affect the quantity of Y, that is the quantity of Pepsi-Cola. Now, if the price of X goes up, and X is Coca-Cola, we should sell more Pepsi-Cola. That is, people are going to buy less Coke and more Pepsi if they increase their price. By definition, we say that that is a positive cross-price elasticity, And any two goods that have a positive cross price elasticity are said to be substitutes. And by substitutes, it means those two goods meet about the same need for consumers. Coca-Cola and Pepsi-Cola, of course, are a good example. Potato chips and Fritos would be another example. Bicycles and cars are substitutes. They're not perfect substitutes, but both will get you across town if you have to do it. So any two goods that have a cross price elasticity that is positive are said to be substitutes. Any two goods that have a cross price elasticity that is negative, and by the way, my overhead transparency says, incorrectly says, complements have a cross price elasticity greater than zero. It should be less than zero. But if the cross price elasticity is less than zero, then we have goods that are complements. That is, that the enjoyment of one is enhanced by also enjoying and consuming the other at about the same time. Now, if you think about this for a minute, potato chips and dip meet are complementary products. Tennis rackets and tennis balls are complements. Pretty hard to enjoy your tennis racket if you don't have a ball. If the price of tennis balls increases, we may decide to play less tennis and buy fewer tennis rackets. If the price of potato chips goes up, we will consume fewer potato chips and less potato chip dip. Hence, an increase in the price of potato chips leads to a decrease in the quantity of dip, and hence a negative cross price elasticity, which of course tells us that these goods are complements, which of course if we had thought about it, we would have known all along. And finally, if two goods have a zero cross price elasticity, they are said to be independent. And again, on figure 13, this appears to be in error because my copy says the independent goods have a positive cross price elasticity, but that should say a zero cross price elasticity. An example, the price of tennis balls and the quantity of potato chips consumed would probably not have much relationship, and we would say those two goods are independent. Our final topic is income elasticity. Now here we have simply computed the the elasticity where we have taken income, which is a variable on the right-hand side of the demand equation, and we have allowed that to vary, and we see how that affects the quantity demanded of a product. And we have some definitions here. If when income increases, and by the way, go to figure 14 if I haven't already said so. Go to figure 14, and by definition, goods that have a positive income elasticity are said to be normal. All right, our income goes up and we consume more of them. All right? In contrast, if income goes up and we consume less of something, that good or service is said to be an inferior good. And I have jokingly said that anything that a college student eats falls in the category of an inferior good. And I refer to such products as Rice-A-Roni and Top Ramen and Hamburger Helper and those kinds of things. You'll probably find when you finish college and start making the big bucks, you won't be consuming those types of things. You'll be getting T-bone steak and lobster tail and shrimp. So if there's a negative income elasticity, then you have an inferior good, and a positive income elasticity is a normal good. Now, the book also describes within the set of normal goods, they say there are non-cyclical goods where the income elasticity is between 0 and 1, and cyclical goods that have an elasticity greater than 1. Sometimes these are also known as luxuries, where the elasticity is greater than 1, and necessities, where it's between 0 and 1. All right, that's the end of our lecture for today on Chapter 5.